Chapter 11. The Invisible Man. Foul Manner. They reached Ireland without major incident, though Mulch did attempt to escape Holly's custody 15 times, including once on the Learjet, where he was discovered in the washroom with a parachute and a bottle of dwarf rock polish. Holly did not let him out of her sight after that. Butler was waiting for them at Foul Manor's front door.
Welcome back. Glad to see everyone's alive. Now, I need to go.
Artemis put a hand on his arm.
Old friend, you're in no condition to go anywhere.
Butler was determined.
One last mission, Artemis. I have no choice. Anyway, I've been doing Pilates. I feel much more limber.
Blunt?
Yes.
But he's in prison, protested Juliet.
Butler shook his head.
Not anymore.
Artemis could see that his bodyguard was not about to be turned from his path.
At least take Holly. She can be of some help.
Butler winked at the elf.
I was counting on it.
The Chicago police had put Arno Blunt in a van with a couple of officers. Two would be sufficient, they reasoned, as the perp was handcuffed and manacled. They revised this opinion when the van was discovered 6 miles south of Chicago, with the officers manacled and no sign of the suspect. To quote Sergeant Iggy Lebowski's report,
"The guy ripped those handcuffs apart as though they were links in a paper chain. He came at us like a steam train. We never had a chance."
But Arno Blunt did not escape clean. His pride had taken a severe beating in the Spiro Needle. He knew that word of his humiliation would soon spread through the bodyguard network. As Porkbelly LaRue later put it on the Soldiers for Hire website,
"Arno done got hisself outsmarted by some snot-nosed kid."
Blunt was painfully aware that he would have to suffer chortles every time he walked into a room full of tough guys, unless he avenged the insult paid to him by Artemis Fowl. The bodyguard knew that he had minutes before Spyro gave up his address to the Chicago PD, so he packed a few spare sets of teeth and took the shuttle to O'Hare Airport. Blunt was delighted to find that the authorities had not yet frozen his Spyro corporate credit card and used it to purchase a first-class British Airways Concorde ticket to London Heathrow. From there, he would enter Ireland on the Rosslare ferry, just another one of 500 tourists visiting the land of the leprechaun. It wasn't a terribly complicated plan, and it would have worked if it hadn't been for one thing. The passport official at Heathrow just happened to be Sid Commons, the ex-Green Beret who had served with Butler on bodyguard duty in Monte Carlo. The second Blunt opened his mouth, alarm bells went off in Commons' head. The gentleman before him fit perfectly the description Butler had faxed over, right down to the strange teeth. Blue oil and water, if you don't mind. Commons pressed a button under his desk, and in seconds a squad of security men relieved Blunt of his passport and took him into custody. The chief security official took out his mobile phone as soon as the detainee was under lock and key. He dialed an international number. It rang twice.
"The Foul residence?"
"Butler, it's Sid Commons in Heathrow. A man came through here you might be interested in. Funny teeth, neck tattoos, New Zealand accent. Detective Justin Barr faxed out the description from Scotland Yard a few days ago. He said you might be able to ID him."
"Do you still have him?" asked the manservant.
"Aye, he's in one of our holding cells. They're running a check right now."
"How long will that take?"
"Couple of hours max. But if he's the professional you say he is, a computer check won't turn up anything. We need a confession to turn him over to Scotland Yard."
"I'll meet you at the arrivals hall under the departure board in 30 minutes, said Butler, severing the connection.
Sid Commons stared at his mobile phone. How could Butler possibly get there in 30 minutes from Ireland? It wasn't important. All Sid knew was that Butler had saved his life a dozen times in Monte Carlo all those years ago, and now the debt was about to be repaid. 32 minutes later, Butler showed up in the arrivals hall. Sid Commons studied him as they shook hands.
"You seem different. Older."
"The battles are catching up with me," said Butler,
a palm across his heaving chest.
"Time to retire, I think.
Is there any point in asking how you got here?"
Butler straightened his tie.
"Not really. You're better off not knowing."
"I see.
Where's our man?"
Commons led the way towards the rear of the building, past hordes of tourists and card-bearing taxi drivers.
Through here. You're not armed, are you? I know we're friends, but I can't allow firearms in here.
Butler spread his jacket wide. Trust me, I know the rules.
They took a security lift up two floors and followed a dimly lit corridor for what seemed like miles.
Here we are, said Sid, eventually, pointing at a glass rectangle. In there.
The glass was actually a two-way mirror. Butler could see Arno Blunt seated at a small table, drumming his fingers impatiently on the formica surface.
Is that him? Is that the man who shot you in Knightsbridge?
Butler nodded. It was him, all right. The same indolent expression, the same hands that pulled the trigger.
A positive ID is something, but it's still your word against his, and to be honest, you don't look too shot.
Butler laid a hand on his friend's shoulder.
I don't suppose... Commons didn't even let him finish. No, you cannot go in there, absolutely not. I'd be out of a job for sure. And anyway, even if you did pry a confession out of him, it would never hold up in court.
Butler nodded.
I understand. Do you mind if I stay? I want to see how this turns out.
Commons agreed eagerly, relieved that Butler hadn't pressured him.
No problem. Stick around as long as you like. But I have to get you a visitor's badge.
He strode down the corridor, then turned.
Don't go in there, Butler. If you do, we lose him forever.
And anyway, there are cameras all over this place. Butler smiled reassuringly. Something he didn't do very often.
Don't worry, Sid. You won't see me in that room.
Commons sighed.
Good. Great. It's just sometimes when you get that look in your eye.
I'm a different man now. More mature.
Commons laughed.
That'll be the day.
He rounded the corner, his chuckles lingering in the air. He was no sooner gone than Holly unshielded by Butler's leg.
Cameras!
Hissed the bodyguard from the corner of his mouth. I checked the ion beams. I'm clear, right here. She pulled a sheet of camouflage foil from her backpack, laying it on the floor. She then twisted a video clip around a cable, tacked to the cell's outer wall.
Okay,
she said, listening to Foley's voice in her ear.
We're in. Foley has wiped our patterns from the video. We are camera and mic proof now. Do you know what to do?
Butler nodded. They had been through this before, but Holly had a soldier's need to double check.
I'm going to shield again. Give me a second to move, then put the foil on and do your thing. I give you 2 minutes, tops, before your friend returns. After that, you're on your own.
Understood.
Good luck,
said Holly, shimmering out of the visible spectrum. Butler waited a beat, then took 2 steps to the left. He picked up the foil and draped it over his head and shoulders. To the casual passerby, he was now invisible. But if anyone paused on his or her way down the corridor, something of the manservant's bulk was bound to be poking out from under the foil. Best to move quickly. He slid across the latch on the cell door and stepped inside. Arno Blunt was not unduly worried. This was a bum rap. How long could you be held for having novelty false teeth, for heaven's sake? Not much longer, that was for sure.
Maybe he would sue the British government for trauma and retire home to New Zealand.
The door swung open 30 centimetres, then closed again. Blunt sighed. It was an old interrogator's trick. Let the prisoner sweat for a few hours, then open the door to make him think help was on the way. When no one entered, the prisoner would be plunged into even deeper despair. Ever closer to breaking point.
Arno Blunt, sighed a voice from nowhere.
Blunt stopped drumming his fingers and sat up straight.
What is this? He sneered. Are there speakers in here? That's lame, guys. Really lame.
I've come for you, said the voice. I've come to even the score.
Arno Blunt knew that voice. He'd been dreaming about it since Chicago, ever since the Irish kid had warned him Butler would return. Okay, it was ridiculous. There was no such thing as ghosts. But there was something about Artemis Fowl's stare that made you believe everything he told you.
Butler? Is that you?
Ah, said the voice. You remember me.
Arno took a deep, shuddering breath, composing himself.
I don't know what's going on here, but I'm not falling for it.
What? I'm supposed to cry like a baby now because you found someone who sounds like one of my...
somebody I knew.
Thus as no trick, Arno, I'm right here.
Sure, if you're right there, why can't I see you?
Are you sure you can't see me, Arno? Look closely.
Blunt's stare hopped wildly around the room. There was no one else in there, no one, he was certain of it. But there was a patch of air in the corner of the room that seemed to be bending light, like a floating mirror.
Ah, you've spotted me.
I've spotted nothing, said Blunt shakily. All I see is a heat blur, maybe from a vent or something.
Oh, really?
Said Butler, throwing off the cam foil. To Blunt, it seemed as though he had stepped from the air. The bodyguard stood abruptly, catapulting his chair against the wall.
Oh, God, what are you?
Butler bent his knees slightly, ready for action. He was older now, true, and slower, but the fairy magic had bolstered his reaction time, and he had so much more experience than Blunt. Juliet would have liked to handle this job for him, but there were some things you had to finish personally.
I am your guide, Arno. I've come to take you home. There are a lot of people waiting to see you.
Home? Stammered Blunt. What do you mean, home?
Butler took a step forward.
You know what I mean, Arno. Home. The place you've always been headed. The place you've sent so many others, including me.
Blunt pointed a shaky finger.
You stay away from me. I killed you once. I can do it again.
Butler laughed. It was not a pleasant sound.
That's where you're wrong, Arno. I can't be killed again. Anyway, death is no big deal. Not compared to what comes after.
Comes after?
There is a hell, Arno, said Butler. I've seen it, and believe me, so will you.
Blunt was utterly convinced. After all, Butler had appeared from nowhere.
I didn't know, he sobbed. I didn't believe it. I never would have shot you, Butler. I was just following Spyro's orders. You heard him give me the order. I was just a metal man. That's all I've ever been.
Butler laid a hand on his shoulder.
I believe you, Arno. You were just following orders.
That's right.
But that's not enough. You need to clear your conscience. If you don't, I have to take you with me.
Blunt's eyes were red with tears.
How? He pleaded. How do I do that?
Confess your sins to the authorities. Leave nothing out, or I will be back.
Blunt nodded eagerly. Prison was better than the alternative.
Remember, I will be watching. This is your one chance to save yourself. If you don't take it, I will be back.
Blunt's teeth popped from his open mouth, rolling across the floor.
Don't worry. I confess, I promise.
Butler lifted the cam foil, concealing himself completely.
See that you do, or there'll be hell to pay.
Butler stepped into the corridor, stuffing the foil inside his jacket. Seconds later, Sid Commons reappeared with a security badge. He caught sight of Arno Blunt standing stunned in his cell.
What did you do, Butler? He said.
Hey. That wasn't me. Check your tapes. He just went crazy talking to thin air, yelling how he wanted to confess.
He wants to confess, just like that.
I know how it sounds, but that's what happened. If I was you, I'd give Justin Barr a call over at Scotland Yard. I have a feeling that Blunt's statement could clear up a lot of outstanding cases.
Commons squinted at him suspiciously.
Why do I have a feeling that you know more than you're telling?
Search me, said Butler. But feelings aren't evidence. And your own surveillance tapes will prove that I never set foot in this room.
Are you sure that's what they'll show?
Butler glanced at the patch of air shimmering above Sid Common's shoulder.
I am positive, he said.